This KSTX Town Hall is made possible by WebHead, delivering digital web-based solutions and technologies. Hello and welcome to a community town hall meeting on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News Director. Tonight's topic, transportation. We're calling it road to rail, which can be taken two different ways. One, we appear to be on a public policy pathway to rail in San Antonio. We could also look at it as an examination of the multimodal solution to our coming transportation nightmare. We need to look at all options in San Antonio from road to rail. My objective tonight is to have a public discussion about the transportation problems that are in the forecast for San Antonio. If you think it's bad now, just wait. The level of growth for the city and the county is undeniable. There is no money coming from Austin and a dwindling supply of grants coming from the budget-busted D.C. Whatever solutions are being developed need to be developed locally with local funds and with local community input. That's why this is a community forum. So tonight we've assembled a panel of experts and public servants who are deeply involved in local public transportation issues. We'll hear from each of our panelists in the beginning for about 5 minutes each about their concerns and vision for San Antonio's transportation and our needs. And then we'll take questions from the floor, and I've got a stack of questions emailed to me from our loyal KSTX listeners. First, let me introduce our panelists. We have Daryl Byrd. He's the president of SA 2020, which is a long-term planning initiative to help shape the city in the coming years. Sid Martinez is the director of the San Antonio Bexar County Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO. Brian Buchanan is the vice president of bus and rail strategic planning and project development at VIA Metropolitan Transit. Leroy Alloway is the director of community development for the Alamo Regional Mobility Authority, also known as the RMA. And Terry Hall is the founder and director of TURF, Texans United for Reform and Freedom, a grassroots organization that has fought toll roads across Texas. And thank all of you for coming, all of our panelists, thank you so much. And we're going to start off now with comments from Daryl Byrd, and please get things started.
Thank you, David. A whole 5 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about SA 2020 and what it is, where we've been, where we're going, and then take the remaining 30 seconds of my 5 minutes to talk a little bit about how that relates to transportation, and we'll be able to talk further about it as the evening progresses. About 1 year ago, Mayor Julian Castro felt it was time for us to think again as a community about where we want to go as a community in the future. And the idea was to look at it in a 10-year increment. 10 years is almost half a generation. The distinction between this effort and other efforts that are take place in communities across this nation is that the idea was for it to truly be grassroots. And when I speak in terms of grassroots, I don't think bottom up, I think top down. I think that the shareholders of the community are actually the bosses. The shareholders are actually the folks who are paying the bill for most of the public investments, whether it's public infrastructure, education, other areas. It is a shareholder. So that is a top-down. The idea was that the public would come together in unprecedented numbers, which is what happened here in San Antonio with SA 2020, and plan for the future of San Antonio. And this was aspirational planning. It wasn't penny-ante stuff, which is incremental and based on continuous improvement, step by step by step. The question posed to the thousands of San Antonians over a period of about 6 months that participated in SA 2020 was, for you, what would you like your community, your city, this place where you live, you have your businesses, your children go to school and are raised, what do you want that city to look and feel like in the year 2020? It wasn't born out of an idea that the mayor or any of the other folks who typically are the leaders that we look to, the guys, men and women that we say are in charge and leading us into the future. It wasn't what their idea of what we need to do in areas of education or transportation or health and fitness or crime prevention. It was what the citizens wanted, the shareholders wanted for their city. And that's what we got. It broke down over that 6 months into about 11 core focus areas. And they ranged from, again, education to crime prevention to downtown development, health and fitness, and transportation was among those as well. Economic competitiveness was also a big one. I'd probably say that the three that received the most attention, the most amount of vigorous discussion and passionate input from the shareholders, the San Antonio citizens, was education, transportation, and downtown development. But they all received a great deal of passionate input. So 11 core focus areas. Today we're going to talk about transportation. My role here today and my role as SA 2020 is not to advocate specifically for one mode of transportation. My role is to take the vision that the shareholders said that they wish to see accomplished by the year 2020 and to do everything that I can to make sure that that comes to fruition. And that's not always broken down at the base level at strategies. It's about vision. It's about targets. It's about goals. Wrapping up quickly, the vision statement for transportation that the shareholders arrived at the end of the visioning process in March of 2011 was this. In the year 2020, San Antonio's transportation system is recognized as a model of efficiency and environmental sustainability. That was the statement. That was the aspirational goal that the citizens wanted for San Antonio. Again, that San Antonio is recognized nationally, our transportation system at least, as a model for efficiency and environmental sustainability. And that can manifest itself in many, many ways, and we'll talk about a few of those this evening. So thank you for your time, and I look forward to a robust discussion.
Thank you, Darrell. That was only 4 minutes, so you still... So you beat your time. All right, Sid Martinez, director of the San Antonio Bexar County Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. I just wanted to use my 5 minutes to kind of go over a little bit of what the Metropolitan Planning Organization is, or the MPO, as I'll refer to it tonight. Kind of give you a little overview of who we are, what we do, and why we're here tonight, sitting at the table. For those of you who are not familiar with the MPO, we are a regional multimodal transportation planning agency that's responsible for a comprehensive, cooperative, and continuous planning process. And what we mean by multimodal, obviously, is that we don't just deal with one mode of travel. We deal with roadways, highways, transit, bicycle, pedestrian lanes. MPOs were created by Congress in 1970 in order to give local transportation or local elected officials a voice at the transportation table. Back in the 1950s, 60s, the planning process in each community was dominated by the departments of transportation across the state. And so Congress recognized that and wanted to give local officials in each of the jurisdictions an opportunity to come to the table and have a say in the transportation projects that are built in their regions. So in 1975, the U.S. Department of Transportation created MPOs to give the local elected officials that vehicle for a voice at the table. MPOs, therefore, are created by federal law to provide a forum for project selection by local officials, to set policy and guide the transportation planning process, and most importantly, to develop the multimodal 25-year transportation plan, which is a little bit about what I'll cover here today. The MPO boundary for our region covers all of Bexar County and small portions of Comán-Guadalupe County. It consists of approximately 1.7 million people who own 1.1 million vehicles, who drive over 35 million miles per day, over 6,000 miles of roadway. There are over 385 MPOs across the country, and there are 25 in Texas. Our MPO here locally is led by a 19-member Transportation Policy Board with officials from Bexar County. We actually have four representatives from Bexar County, six from the city of San Antonio, two state legislators, two representatives from VIA Transit, two from the Texas Department of Transportation, one from the Northeast Partnership of Cities, one from the Greater Bexar County Council of Cities, and then one from the Alamo Area Council of Governments. Bexar County Commissioner Tommy Atkinson is the chair of the MPO board, and City of San Antonio Councilman Ray Lopez serves as the vice chair. Like I said a little bit a few minutes ago, one of the main responsibilities of the MPO is to create a 25-year long-range multimodal transportation plan, and that plan is what we call financially constrained, meaning that over those 25 years, what we do is forecast the revenue that we anticipate receiving through state and federal and local resources, and then we apply that revenue to the projects that we feel that we can build over those 25 years. And that plan is adopted every 5 years, so it's reevaluated continuously. The last plan was adopted in December of 2009. And where we start when we adopt these plans is basically with a demographic forecast. So our first job is to look at what we anticipate occurring in terms of growth over those 25 years. And this last plan update noted that we were anticipating an additional 600,000 residents in this community, in our MPO boundary, over the next 25 years, which is a significant amount of growth. As you know, San Antonio is one of the fastest growing regions, not only in the state of Texas, but also in the United States. And that's going to add some significant woes to our transportation issues that we have already today. And one of the other issues that we have is, of course, the transportation funding. As David stated when we first started, we have a dwindling tax, state and federal gas tax. It no longer has the purchasing power that it had. The last time that the state gas tax was raised was in 1991. The last time that the federal gas tax was raised was in 1993. And so we've seen the purchasing power of that gas tax erode significantly. And that's caused and created some significant issues for us on the transportation side. And I don't think anybody would sitting at the table would deny that. We're starting to have to find some different ways of funding transportation projects, unfortunately, because of that. And one of the biggest ways that we can see that is, again, when we look at building our transportation plan, we have to look at the revenues that we anticipate receiving over those 25 years. And when we started doing the plan for the adoption in 2009, we quickly saw that we were losing some significant amount of money. Usually when we do a new plan, we see increases and we can say, okay, our plan over the last 5 years grew 10% in terms of funding, and so we can add some more projects. In this last plan update, we saw a significant reduction somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 billion over the 25 years of the plan. And so we were forced to cut projects instead of add projects, which is our normal process. So that's the biggest challenge for us. We're no longer seeing the traditional funding sources that we would see in the past and the steady streams of funding that we would see in the past. We're now trying to fix our transportation problems with shots of funding in the arm, such as economic stimulus and any other state funding sources like Prop 12 that we can receive and that we can get. And that's caused some significant issues for us in terms of planning. But I'm sure we'll get more into that as the evening goes on.
Thank you, Sid. That's Sid Martinez, director of the San Antonio Bexar County Metropolitan Organization. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Newsmaker Hour, and this is a town hall meeting on transportation issues in San Antonio Bexar County called Road to Rail. Moving on, Brian Buchanan, vice president of bus and rail strategic planning and project development at Via Metropolitan Transit. Brian.
Thank you, David. Thank you for the opportunity tonight to come out and sit with these distinguished panelists to talk about this important issues about transportation in the Bexar County area. Let me talk a little bit about VIA today. VIA today is a rubber-tired bus system. We're a great rubber-tired bus system. We operate in approximately 98% of Bexar County. We run 91 bus routes. We operate approximately 21 hours a day. And our ridership over this year is almost up over double digits. So this is the VIA of today. Shortly, approximately 2 years ago, shortly around the same time frame that the mayor embarked on SA 2020, VIA went after a long-range comprehensive transportation plan of its own. And this was a response to what we saw coming, which was great growth in and around the Bexar County, San Antonio area. Some of the visioning that's been done in the area about growth in the downtown and growth into the region. And we came out with a long-range comprehensive transportation plan, which our board of directors passed in July of this year. That plan envisions approximately $3.5 billion to $4 billion worth of improvements that would be needed to the transportation system, to the transit system, over the next 25 years. And that runs the full gamut of modes of different transit systems, anything from improved headways on our current bus system to new routes, new buses, to new facilities, but also started to look at multimodalism. Multimodalism was something new to San Antonio, and we needed to look at that because we needed to start looking at capacity. We needed to have more capacity in certain areas to carry the ridership that we anticipate. So we embarked on that, and then, you know, we had $3.5 billion over 25 years. Where do you start? So our board challenged us as staff to go and look at what can we do in the next 5 years. and VIA came out with a short-term capital program. And that short-term capital program, yes, has streetcar in it, but it also has several other things that are associated to our core business, and that is our rubber-tired bus service. So let me just run down what those are, because there's been a lot of discussion about streetcar, but there's other elements in this plan. First are downtown amenities. We would like to improve the areas and the amenities in our downtown area for our passengers to wait and to ride our bus service. So we've applied some money towards the short-term capital program to make those changes and those upgrades in the downtown area. We also see some great opportunity and growth in the southern part of Bexar County with Eagle Ford Shale and all the growth that may occur down in that particular area. We currently don't really have a transit facility in that general area. So we are looking out at the Brook City base area to put in a transit facility where people could drive to, park their car, and then come into downtown or go wherever they want to across the VIA system. That's in the southern area. We also see a demand coming in the northern half of the region, the 281 corridor, the corridor that I think we can all agree is a great corridor to have a great conversation about. So we are currently, believe it or not, we operate a park and ride out of the Walmart up there on basically a handshake agreement. Great, we're glad to be there, but we want a little more permanency up there. So we're looking at providing some type of permanent facility up in the Stone Oak 281 area to try to capture those people and then bring them to wherever they want to be, either whether it be in the downtown or maybe when Wurzbach Parkway opens up across there over to the medical center area, which is where we see a lot of our travel demand going. We also have two facilities that are near and dear to VIA's operations, and that's our Westside Multimodal Center. Some of you may know it as the Generations Credit Union at 123 Medina in downtown. It's the old International Great Northern Train Depot. VIA purchased that last year and is going to turn it back into what its intended use was, and that was a true multimodal system, our multimodal hub. So picture one day, you'll be able to catch a streetcar there, you'll be able to catch a VIA bus, but you also may be able to catch a taxi, you'll be able to catch Lone Star Rail up to Austin, or maybe catch Amtrak and ride it across the United States. But so bringing that facility back to a true multimodal hub in the San Antonio region. And then another asset VIA has, which we would like to improve, is our Robert Thompson Transit Center, and that's the transit center that is below the Alamo Dome. Many of you may not know it's even there. It is a facility that was built with the Alamo Dome for special events, and we'd like to bring that facility up to par and bring it up and use it as a daily use facility and facilitate some transfers in and around the downtown area. And then we have the two streetcar routes that have been major discussions over the last several weeks and several months. Those two streetcar routes, approximately 5 miles of streetcar in the north, south, east, west, the Broadway corridor and the east-west corridor, whether it be Nueva or Market or Commerce, and then connecting places where people live, work, and play, like the Pearl Brewery to the Broadway corridor and the Hemisphere Park with some of the great things that are going to happen in and around that area, and trying to build in and build with the mayor's vision of the decade of downtown, bring in a circulation system that will help spur economic development but also move people in and around the core of the downtown area. Thank you.
Okay, Brian Buchanan, Vice President of Bus and Rail Strategic Planning and Project Development at VIA Metropolitan Transit. And we're moving on to Leroy Alloway, Director of Community Development for the Alamo Regional Mobility Authority.
Thank you, Dave. And again, I'll just echo what we've heard everyone else say. Thank you for having this panel tonight, and thank everyone who's in attendance tonight. The Alamo RMA is probably the youngest agency sitting up here, with the exception of Vision 2020. Let me correct myself. From a transportation standpoint, we were created in late 2003. Our board first met in 2004. We have a 7-member board of directors. Our chairman is appointed by the governor. The other 6 members of our board are appointed by Bexar County Commissioner's Court. We're charged with finding solutions to the congestion that's currently gripping our community on 1604 from US 90 over to IH-35 by the Forum on the northeast part of our community, from 281, or on 281, from Loop 1604 up to the Bexar-Comal County line. And we're starting to look at how you can do long-term improvements on IH-35 from the county line into downtown San Antonio. These are multi-billion dollar projects that we're talking about. This is finding solutions and providing relief for a 25-year horizon of transportation. As you heard Sid talk about from the MPO perspective, we plan on a 25-year horizon, recognizing it takes time to get a project not only developed, environmentally cleared, funded, but built. By the time you go through that entire process, and if you include litigation, and we've been sued a couple of times, so I'll be glad to help talk about that at some point. On average, we're seeing nationally, it takes about 14 years to have a road go from a concept to a vehicle driving on it. Just hang on that number for a minute. 14 years. In the last 10 years, the census that was just released, if you look at the population of our community outside of 1604, from 90 over to I-35, we had a 220% thereabout increase in the number of people living outside of 1604. For those of you who may be really statistic lovers like me, there is a census tract at Culebra in 1604 that grew in the last 10 years by 16,000%. Don't exactly know how you get that much growth in one census tract, but according to the U.S. Census, 16,000% growth. So on 1604, on 281, we're looking on those two projects at about $1.7 billion of new capacity, the total project cost, engineering, right-of-way, construction. $1.7 billion of new capacity on those two corridors, and we have today $216 million coming from state funding to be able to do that project, due to both of those projects. If you add I-35 into the mix, you're probably looking somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 to $2.5 billion or higher, and we have exactly $0 from our federal or state partners sitting reserved on that corridor. So we have to have the difficult conversation about how do we fund these needed improvements. If you look at what Houston, Dallas, Austin, El Paso, the Rio Grande Valley, Tyler, Texas are doing, they're using multiple sources. They're using tolling, but they're also looking at how they can leverage that. The Texas Transportation Institute in 2010 did a study for the State House that laid out what local communities were anticipated to contribute from local funds, going back to something Dave mentioned at the start of this broadcast, from local funds over the next 25 years, what are the local communities expected to put in? San Antonio is a little over $1 billion locally, including the Advanced Transportation District, toll projects that are planned. El Paso is about $1.5 billion. Austin is about $7 billion. Houston is close to a little over $19 billion. And Dallas is over $20 billion. When we've got federal and state budget deficits, when we're seeing a reduction in those funds, when we want to remain competitive and be able to bring economic development to the community and recognize the amount of growth that's already happening here, we have to start looking at the available tools that have been authorized that we're currently not using. Tolling being one of those, transportation reinvestment zones being another. We cannot simply depend on Austin or D.C. to bail us out and solve this problem without us putting local investment and local skin in the game. So we've got two environmental impact statements that are ongoing right now. We're working with VIA to ensure that what we do on 281 and on 1604 would not preclude future mass transit, multimodal expansion in those corridors. We're trying to do everything we can to be as environmentally friendly as possible with these multi-million dollar studies. Again, we're spending $17 million on these two studies right now, looking at about 45 miles of potential added capacity roadway. And we hope to be done with the 1604 study by the December of 2012 and 281 by the December of 2013. So we still have a little bit of ways to go. But again, $17 million being invested to hopefully get environmental clearance, and get us a way forward on over $1.5 to $1.7 billion worth of new capacity. Thanks.
That was Leroy Alloway, Director of Community Development for the Alamo Regional Mobility Authority. Moving on, we have Terry Hall, Founder and Director of TURF, Texans United for Reform and Freedom, a grassroots organization that's involved in transportation issues. Terry?
Thank you, and thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. I apologize for my voice in advance. recovering from a cold. One of the, I guess you could say, outcomes of having eight children. There's always a cold at our house. I see lots of familiar faces out in the audience tonight, and it's always feels like I'm coming home whenever we have these types of forums, and I'm so glad that you're all here. I have to say, what is our vision at TURF? Well, we're very grassroots. In fact, all grassroots. None of us are paid. We're all volunteers. And so what TURF is about is what you're about. And we want an affordable, freely accessible transportation system that is accessible to all San Antonians. And we feel that does not include toll roads. Tolls are not sustainable. And in fact, they're the most expensive way to fund our roads. And here's why they're not sustainable, because we're not doing traditional turnpikes like we've had in Houston and Dallas through the years. We're now coming in and turning existing roads and right-of-way into toll roads, and that's completely different than when it was a brand-new turnpike, brand-new right-of-way. The people got to vote on it through the bonding process, and the traffic projections showed that there would be enough people projected to use that road to pay for itself. And they used toll revenue bonds, which meant that the private investors, the bond investors, took the hit if the traffic didn't show up. So it didn't come to the taxpayer to bail out these toll roads. What we're seeing today under Governor Rick Perry's version, which we've had now implemented since he's become governor, that's been very controversial, I might add, because it hasn't ever come to the voters, is completely different in that they're not coming to the voters on this. They're using massive amounts of public money to subsidize these. And we, the taxpayers, are on the hook for the losses if the traffic doesn't show up. And that's what's happening in these other areas of the state that Mr. Alloway mentions. In Austin, for instance, you and I, with our gas tax dollars, have had to bail out the Austin toll road system to the tune of $100 million. And it's only been open for 3 years. This is a huge problem, and no one's talking about that. So tolls aren't sustainable. They're not. They shouldn't be part of the mix in the way that we're doing them now. They're not covering the cost to construct and operate and maintain those roads. We're $31 billion in debt for roads. Before Rick Perry, we had pay-as-you-go. If you didn't have the money, you didn't get the road built. Now we are literally in a sea of red ink. To give you a perspective of how big $31 billion is, our last biennium at our legislature just, the session just ended and adjourned in June, or excuse me, end of May. Most of the laws took effect in June of this year. Our entire 2-year budget deficit that we were looking at, depending on whose figures you looked at, was anywhere from $18 to $25 billion. We are $31 billion in the hole for roads, and that's before they float these other $3 billion in Prop 12 bonds that they approved a few months ago. So this isn't sustainable. We're going to be eaten alive with these costs. And they're already coming at us with these transportation reinvestment zones that they want to use now property taxes to subsidize toll roads. I don't know anybody who thinks their property tax bill is too low. It's already too high. And when we take our local tax sources like that for property tax that go to fund other local needs, then that means the money that they get and divert to transportation, we know how government works, they're going to go replace that money with something else, which means you're going to have a property tax increase. Plus, they count on the higher valuations in the zone to be able to fund those projects. So you're going to, either way, you're going to get hit with a higher property tax that you pay out of your pocket. The third thing we want to see is an end to gas tax diversions. This is a huge problem. Sid's talked about it. Leroy's talked about it. We all know that we have a shortage in road funds, but we want to look at why, as far as from the taxpayer's perspective. Well, that's because our legislature, as well as Congress, continue to raid our gas tax dollars for non-road uses, for things that don't have anything to do with building our highways and maintaining our highways. We're getting close to almost 50% of our gas tax money going elsewhere and not to roads. In fact, they increased the number of gas tax diversions in this last biennium budget. We think that we can get all of our roads fixed and funded without increases in toll, in other words, without toll roads, and no, even without a gas tax increase, by simply ending diversions and also taking our other road taxes that aren't necessarily a dedicated fund right now, but dedicating those to roads. For instance, the vehicle sales tax. That brings in $2 to $3 billion a year in taxes that we all pay. You know how this is. Every time you buy or sell a vehicle, you get hit with a pretty hefty tax anytime it changes hands. And that's $2 to $3 billion a year in money that's going to general revenue instead of to roads. We could fund all of our roads without any need for tax increases by simply taking the money we already give to Austin and putting it toward roads where it belongs. So that's one solution that we can use. And then we'd also like to see our public transportation system at VIA continue to grow and prosper the way it has. Let's think about this. Bus rapid transit. We have been very big advocates of bus rapid transit. Like he mentioned, Mr. Buchanan mentioned, there's a park and ride up in the Walmart area at in Stone Oak at 281 and 1604. Literally, there's lines in the morning for people clamoring to get on this bus that takes them to downtown. People, commuters love it. They want to see other options besides just getting in your car and having the daily commute with congestion. They can work on their laptops, get some work done on the way downtown. And it's been wildly successful. We want to see more of that versus what we feel is a very ill-conceived streetcar plan that only serves the downtown area and is not helping to solve our congestion areas as a our congestion as a region.
Thank you, Terry Hall, founder and director of TURF, Texans United for Reform and Freedom. This is KSTX San Antonio, 89.1 FM, and you're listening to Newsmaker Hour, and this is a town hall meeting, a forum on transportation in San Antonio from road to rail. We're going to start getting into our question and answering part of our program, and I want to pick up on some of the issues that Ms. Hall brought up, questions that she says that we can, if we stop diversions from our gas tax and also brought some more focus to our vehicle sales tax revenue, that we could fix our transportation issues. And I think Leroy Alloway of the Alamo RMA, does that ring true to you?
Well, Dave, there's truth in part of it. I'll say we agree entirely. We need to end the diversions from the gas tax. It's been something we've been supportive of for the last three legislative sessions. But you've got to take the next step and finish the statement. When you eliminate where those diversions are going to, you need to be able to fund those projects. The biggest source, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but the biggest source of diversions from the gas tax goes to fund the Texas Department of Public Safety. So how do we pay for the state troopers that are on the roads? How do we pay for those employees, those public servants, those law enforcement officials who work for DPS? It's not as simple as saying end the diversions and it'll solve all of the problems. You can end the diversions, but where do you replace the money that's currently being used to fund DPS? That's the question that keeps coming up in the legislature. This last session, we saw a number of bills introduced. We saw one bill actually from Representative Larson that made it the furthest of any bill I can remember to end the diversions, but it got out of transportation and it died in the calendar committee, unfortunately. But it's still the same question. We can talk about the problems with having diversions away from the gas tax, but for every 20 cents that you spend, a nickel since 1942 goes to fund public education. Of the remaining 15 cents, Terry's exactly right. Almost half gets diverted to other non-road purposes, like the Department of Public Safety, like school buses, like other purposes that the legislature has done. We feel it should be ended. We support ending it. But we've got to have that conversation. If you end it, how do you still fund those other programs that the state has said are vital?
Well, we're opening up our mic. If you want to ask a question, please state your name and keep your points sharp and give your question. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Jack Finger. Here's my question. In view of the fact that San Antonio rejected electric streetcars back in the 1930s, in view of the fact that Houston and Dallas have their own light rail system that has lost ridership and is losing money, and in view of the fact that rubber tires are more flexible than embedded steel and steel rails and wheels, wouldn't it make more sense to use that money for more driver-friendly options than the light rail that is being proposed at $90 million a mile is being reported?
That sounds like a question that Brian Buchanan of VIA can handle.
Yeah, I guess my first response would be that $90 million a mile is not the mile, the dollar we're looking at. We're looking at around $40 million a mile. So, well, it's not 90. It's not 90. And then let's talk about streetcar. Let's talk about where streetcar is going, where it's planned. Streetcar is being planned in an area of permanency. Do we think downtown San Antonio is going to move anytime soon? Do we think that the Pearl Brewery is going to pick up and move anytime soon? Do we think that downtown government is going to pick up and move anytime soon? These are permanent riders, permanent ridership that we look at, that we can build a permanent solution, and that permanent solution is rail. And there are studies out there all across the nation, and you mentioned a few of the failed or perceived failures. I think any addition is not necessarily a failure. So I think there's different degrees of which people measure things, and some people take it to the extreme. But I come from Phoenix, Arizona, where it was just like here, where people would not get out of their cars. It was not going to happen. We told the government we would have 27,000 average daily riders per day. And just this week and over the last couple of months, they're averaging over 50,000 people a day riding that system. It's the same type of demographics. It's people that are in their cars. It's urban sprawl area. And these types of systems, as the economy changes and as things change, the people levitate to have different choices on how they conduct their lives. So putting a streetcar system in downtown San Antonio gives people choices to how to get, they get to where they live, work, and play. But it also stimulates economic development. And some of you may not believe that, and that's fine, but there are studies out there. There are great cities in this nation where there are great developments and where people go visit and live, work, and play, that the economic development around the streetcar system and the streetcar stops has been vital to that city's economic development and economic growth. And we believe that that's some of the things that we can bring to downtown San Antonio. I mean, let's not mixed words here. Downtown San Antonio needs a little bit of help right now. There's a vacancy rate down there. We're trying to get people to move into the urban core, stop some of the sprawl, stop some of that issues, and bringing in transportation systems associated with urbanism is something that we believe will greatly benefit the San Antonio region.
Okay. And just a reminder, this is a civil discussion. Try and keep comments from the overall audience in control. And let me ask a question that we got from email from one of our listeners, and then we'll get to our next on-the-floor question. How does a 5 to 10 years projections in fuel cost factor into planning of San Antonio as well as the South Central Texas transportation system? What are those fuel cost projections, and how will increases in projected fuel cost affect demand for greater transportation systems efficiency? Anyone want to handle that? Is that
sure, I can try.
And this is Sid Martinez of the MPO.
You know, obviously, as the price of gasoline increases, people tend to drive less, which means that we have less funding, even less funding for roadway building and construction. You might say, well, people are driving less, and that means you don't need as many roads. But the problem is that people will drive less. They will cut out their extra trips. They'll cut out their recreational trips, but they won't cut out the trips that are necessary, which are their trips to work. And when do you have the most congestion? On your way to work and on your way home from work. So the congestion problems don't end just because people cut out those trips. We're seeing less funding in total as gas prices go up, which means less money to do transportation projects. So it's a cycle that doesn't seem to fix itself. It only causes more problems. And I just want to say one thing really quickly about the $40 million per mile cost for VIA. I know a lot of people balk at that, but I think what we have to realize before we even look at just that number alone is that transportation projects in general are very expensive. If you look at the roadway project on 281 from 1604 to the Bear Comal County line, that's only an 8-mile project, and it's estimated at $450 million, which means it's $56.2 million per mile. You look at the 410-281 interchange. If anybody in this room doesn't think that project should have happened, you can raise your hand now. But that was a $150 million project. Transportation is not cheap by any means. And so that's one point that I think we need to make today before people start balking at the numbers that we're giving in terms of cost for transit.
Terry, you wanted to jump in?
I did, just because I've seen this happening. both at our MPO and just with our local decision making, is that there's two competing priorities with our transportation. Toll roads, if that's what we're going to use as part of our solution to this congestion issue, really what it does is manipulate congestion for profit. It just diverts people off of our freeways and highway system and puts them on our arterials. It doesn't necessarily mean that people are suddenly now not going to go to work. If they can't afford it, they're going to divert. So the toll roads also, to stay solvent, require an ever-increasing number of cars to get on that road from now until the bond debt is paid off, which is going to be 50 years. So how is it that we're going to solve any, let's say, air quality or other issues, environmental concerns or what have you, that we hear a lot about transportation and wanting to reduce vehicle miles traveled, which is a noble goal? How are we going to do that if we can't keep these toll roads solvent without having an ever-increasing number of cars on the road? So it's like, you know, VIA's goals are completely contradictory to those of toll roads. So I just think that we need to have a comprehensive, cohesive plan that has consensus from the community behind it before we do this. And ultimately, I think one of the big problems with the streetcar plan as is it's never come to the voters. In fact, they're bypassing the voters on this. They're not asking the taxpayers what they think is a plan that's going to work and how we want to fund it and if we think it's a reasonable cost per mile.
Well, this is a tangential point. The you know, we're seeing more hybrid vehicles and electric vehicles, and if we're talking about gas tax to pay for transportation, how are these vehicles going to pay their way?
That is a huge problem. There's a lot of discussion happening both at the federal level and in the state legislature right now about that very issue. There's been a lot of talk and ideas floated around. In fact, TxDOT commissioned a study for the Texas Transportation Institute to do the study on a vehicle miles travel tax. There's a lot of hesitation from people that I hear all the time of kind of the big daddy government aspect to that, where you feel like the government's literally in your car tracking you everywhere you go, and there's obviously a lot of problems, liberty problems with that. But there is a problem with the fact that we're going to have hybrid vehicles eating into our gas tax revenues. That is an issue. But there may be another way that we can tax those vehicles and capture some of that lost revenue through another means besides one that's so invasive like a vehicle miles travel tax would be. And my fear is, I've already seen this happen with tolls, if it's in the hands of unelected people that aren't controlled, you know, or don't answer to the taxpayer, then that's another big objection.
Okay. George.
Thank you. I'm glad that Mr.
Can introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm George Rodriguez. I'm president of the San Antonio Tea Party. And I'm really glad that David mentioned early on about how civil we need to be, because the last time I was sitting where you gentlemen were, I got called a Nazi. But that's okay.
Well, let's not milk that anymore.
No. You know, I'm going to use that as much as I can, since I don't look German. You know, that's the thing that I want to... Quiero que sepan eso, you know? I'm bilingual, you know? So anyway, the thing that I just need to know, folks, is, you know, you guys are bureaucrats, okay? And what gets me is why aren't our elected officials, who are supposed to be responding to us as public servants that we are the people that have elected them, that they are supposed to be, there's supposed to be some kind of constitutional requirement, my understanding, of the govern. Why can't we not have another, some kind of vote on VIA, on their plans, on whether or not we want rail? I don't understand that. I mean, the comment that was made this morning by Mr. Elizondo regarding that there was too much input from the citizens, no entiendo. I don't understand that. You know? I just don't understand.
So your question, George.
And my question is, do you guys have some kind of comment about that?
Well, first, I want to say one thing about that. You say bureaucrats as if it's a pejorative. I mean, these guys are public servants.
No. Hey,
and they're taking
the
time
fits,
away from their family to be here.
You know, hey, if the shoe fits, wear it. I'm just saying bureaucrats.
Okay.
And that's what they are.
And you so know? You're saying that, where are the elected officials?
I'm asking, do they know why the elected officials, since they're so close to them, why aren't the elected officials allowing us to vote on this matter?
Well, I think that's something that you could take up with the elected officials. I mean, these guys, they're not in a position to answer that question.
Would you think that it would be a good idea for us to have a vote on it, a public vote on this matter?
On the streetcar program?
Yes.
I don't believe there. Yeah, we believe there's public input. Okay.
Right.
We went out to the voters with the ATD money back in I wasn't around, so many years ago.
That's the Advanced Transportation District.
Advanced Transportation District, and those are the funds that we're going to utilize part to fund part of this program. This is also money that is collected with FIAs. Farebox revenue and other different funding sources. So, I mean, this is the beginning of a large, much larger program, and I am pretty sure, and I can't speak for elected officials, but I am pretty sure that in order for us to continue on with this rail program and continue with some of those things that are identified as part of that $3.5 billion program that we have, we will require a vote of the people. And so if you didn't get it this time, I would anticipate that you may get it at some other time.
Before the money is spent, I hope.
I wanted to jump in on the ATD since that is how the streetcar plan is planning to be funded. And VIA already has a whole pot of money, if you remember from the election where that created the Advanced Transportation District from November of 2004, I believe it was. Half of that money was supposed to go to VIA, and it was specifically told to us by Judge Wolf and many other transportation leaders at the time. We have the Express News articles here if anyone wants to see them, where they promised that this ATD money was going to be half for buses and half for roads. And now we're spending $147 million, last I counted, total, yeah, in city and county ATD road funds to do this streetcar program at a time when road funds are so scarce that we're being told the entire north side has to pay tolls to get out of congestion. So I think that's another, you know, that's one of the things that's causing us heartburn on this particular proposal about the streetcars. It's heisting yet more of our road money to something that is not directly related.
If I could respond to that real fast, I think there's a couple other projects that the ATD funded that are pretty important to everybody in this room, and that would be the 1604 Super Street, right, or 281 Super Street, I'm sorry. That was an ATD funded project. I think that was a benefit to everybody in that corridor. There's Blanco Road up in the north half of the San Antonio area that was funded through the ATD. As part of this agreement that brings streetcar funding to VIA, there's two other projects, roadway projects, that are going to be funded as part of the ATD. So I do believe there's a balance being done between alternative modes of transportation, such as streetcar or transit, and the roadway network.
That was like maybe, I think it was $1 to $2 million went to the super streets versus $147 million really eclipses that little bit that we've seen so far. I don't know what the Blanco Road project costs, but at the end of the day, that could build probably close to half of what we need done on 281 without tolls if we just use that money on where the most congestion is. I think that we're not solving congestion in our community the more we keep sapping our road money and putting it in places that aren't roads and aren't for highways, that we continue down this road of constant controversy and rubbing up against everybody, and we really need to come up with consensus that the community can get behind and not just continue to try and railroad everybody into other people's agendas. And mostly it's elected officials, and if we have to use that term, bureaucrats.
Okay. I'm really going to try and limit those. I'm going to ask, I got an email question real quickly, and I'll direct this to Daryl Bird of SA 2020. In May 2000, 70% of registered voters said no to proposed funding of light rail by VIA. So why are we having another election?
Why aren't we?
We already said no once. Why are we coming back to this issue again?
Okay, guys, I don't know if I can totally answer why there's no election, but my sense of the difference between, was it May 2010, and November of 2000, right, May of 2000, and November of 2011, that's 11 years. You know, there has been an extraordinary amount of growth, change, evolution in this community. In 10 years, that's half a generation. Now, I'm not here to say, let me share my thoughts if I could. Now, that's an extraordinary amount of change. That those are probably, I wouldn't know the numbers, but probably tens upon thousands and thousands of San Antonians that have moved into this community. New San Antonio. It's a very different landscape, whether they're folks moving here because of their work or because of jobs, whether they're new students, whether they're folks just moving here because of for quality of life reasons, whether they're military retirees. This is an evolving community, and it's very difficult, I think, to take a snapshot of what the conditions were at the time 11 years ago, what those conditions were that led people to not be in favor of a rail project, which was my understanding, I was new to town then, was formulated very different than the ideas that VIA and others have today. It's very difficult to conflate that with our conditions today. So I would just make that general point. Very, very different San Antonios. The other thing I just wanted to make a general comment on while I have the mic, because I don't know if I'm not a transit expert, so I don't know when it's going to come back to me here. Investment in the future is critical. It is critical. And I'm not suggesting that there's anyone here in person or in across the airwaves that doesn't believe that, but the San Antonio that we enjoy today, the San Antonio that we appreciate, the San Antonio that our children are growing up in, our grandchildren are growing up in, did not become what it is today without an extraordinary amount of investment over time. And there were certain periods of time when enormous amounts of public infrastructure investments were necessary to give us the San Antonio that we have today. So that's just a broad statement that we can't forget. Now, it's very easy for us, particularly the adults in the room, to think in terms of dollar spent or nickel spent today and how that relates to us. You know, I would encourage us all, whatever the mode of transportation we are interested in, that we think about our children and our grandchildren. You got to think about them in terms of what they inherit in terms of debt. I agree with that 100%. But you also need to think about what type of a San Antonio they will inherit if we don't make the requisite investments today in service to them. You really need to be thinking about those things. San Antonio is at a crossroads. The stakes are extraordinarily high from a competitive perspective, just to use business term for a minute. The stakes are very high when you think of the next 10 to 20 years. There are cities that are very competitive with us today that are lower tier cities that are making enormous investments in themselves. These are community investments in community. And if we don't make investments in ourselves, we're going to be looking up at those cities. Jobs, businesses will not see San Antonio as a place to be, a place to relocate or to expand their operations and hire new folks, our children, our grandchildren. There are 80 million plus millennials. These are folks who are the generation replacing the Xers. This is a generation that is larger in number than the baby boomers. These folks are making decisions about where they choose to make their home in a very different way than my generation, the Xers, in a very different way than the boomers did. And many of those elements relate to quality of life. And transportation is but one of them, but they're making very different decisions. And I'm just suggesting that we all, me included, think about our children and our grandchildren and what type of investments we need to make today to make San Antonio the most irresistible place for them and their peers in the future.
Okay. Let's now back to questions from the audience. And yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Melvin Householder, and I'm just a concerned citizen. I don't understand for the life of me why we look at all the places in the United States that we have light rail, and they all have to be subsidized. None of them will operate on their own. Then pretty soon we decide, well, that didn't work, so we tear the rails out. Then we come back and we do it again. What's the matter with us? Think about it. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect it to work. That's from Mr. Buchanan.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. Almost every transit system is subsidized. It is a form of public transportation. And we are looking to just put modes into people's lives so they can have choices. And Mr. Bird said it very eloquently, that there are other people out there. There are different people. There are the Twitters of the world, the people that are coming up that want to do things other than drive around in a car. They want to live in downtown. They want to live in the suburbs or and be able to catch a train and come into work. I mean, those are types of things that people are growing into and things. You go back to 2000 when the ATD or the light rail election was had, you know, gas was, I think, about $1.71 a gallon. unemployment was 4%. Milk was probably $1.99 a gallon. You know, there are things that have changed over the last 11 years, and people continue to grow, and people continue to look for different ways to live. And I think that public transportation, mass transportation, and rail transportation is some of the things that those generations are looking for.
The rubber tire, you can move it around. The rails are there, and they're there for good. It makes no sense.
All right. Okay. Yes, sir. Introduce yourself.
Hello. My name is Matthew Sheridan. Personally, I think there's not a better thing we can do for our city than build a rail system to improve our economy, education, people getting around. I come from a charter school where kids live from all around the city, and one of the main problems we have is getting to school every day because we love our charter school and we don't want to go to a normal public school. And the biggest problem we have right now is getting there, because the only way we have to get there is the via bus or taking a car. A lot of times a car breaks down, you know, a parent doesn't drive because they get out of work. We need a rail system, and I don't think there could be a better way to do that, you know, than through you guys. I've talked to a couple people about including a rail system into a place that hasn't included one. One specific example would be in New Mexico, where they included one from Albuquerque to Santa Fe. And people all over were just like, we're never going to use it. We're never going to use it. They put it in there. Now it's almost like overcrowded. They can't even like fit people in there. So my question to you guys is, besides using revenue from gas taxes and railroad or and toll roads, how could we fund a project like this? What would be the best way?
I'll handle that.
Is there any other ways besides that we could try?
I'll start with that.
George.
And probably one of the best things we could probably do is take our local money and leverage it with federal dollars. Go after those federal dollars that are out there. And because regardless of the money, it's going somewhere. And I would rather it come to San Antonio than go to California or go to Michigan or go to some other location. So let's leverage our local dollars by going after federal dollars to help fund some of these programs and bring some of those federal dollars home and help build our transportation system.
Well, aren't there other possibilities of coming up with ways to find revenues? You've got to be inventive. You got to go to Austin. You got to convince the lawmakers to pass it. You got to convince the governor to sign it. Locally, a local gas tax or sales tax. We already have a sales tax in place to try and generate revenue for public transportation. Other ideas, you know, this is a new generation. It's going to take new ideas. So is there anything else out there, any new ideas, fresh ideas that can be cracked open?
The legislature has discussed a local sales tax option for communities for the last couple legislative sessions, and unfortunately, those bills haven't gone anywhere, but those have been some viable options that we think would be good for the future. Obviously, those would be referendums that would go before voters, but we would look at ways to implement a local gas tax for a local gas tax increase for transportation for the funding would stay within our own community. An additional fee added to our vehicle registration fees that again would stay within our local community. And so there are some other options out there. They're obviously difficult things for the legislature to do. Raising taxes are never easy. And so we hope that in the future, though, they will give local communities and local regions throughout the state the opportunity to do that and take that to the voters.
If I could just jump in, it's not what a lot of people like to hear other than taxpayers, but I think we need to prioritize the spending. Let's look in Austin and the amount of waste that we've seen both there and in our federal budget for that matter. But just in Austin, I know those numbers better. Our spending has nearly doubled in the last 10 years under Rick Perry, nearly tripled in the last 20 years. And that is above population growth and inflation. Government's growing at a rate faster than we can afford to pay for it, which is partly why we're so much in debt, and they're just really good at hiding the debt. Rick Perry tries to say our budget is balanced when, in fact, we all know it's not if you've studied it at all. Our last federal highway bill had 6,000 earmarks in it for projects that, like the Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska, for instance, that had no federal relevance in them. So we've had a lot of misplaced priorities with how our money is being spent. And that's why there's so much resistance to all of these other options we've looked at and the increases in taxes, because that all means more money out of our pocket going into what we see as a wasteful system. So that's really one of our problems. If we could start to see some fiscal restraint and some fiscal sanity back in both Austin and Washington, I think you'd see a whole lot more willingness to maybe part with more of our dollars if they had us a program that told us well-defined how it was going to be spent directly on what kind of project, how many miles it was going to be, what the cost per mile would be. And those types of elections have generally been approved. I mean, they've gone very well in our region and as well as statewide with the constitutional amendments, same thing. So I think if you have a well-defined project that people can get behind and they understand it and there's full disclosure and lots of transparency and scrutiny being, you know, withstanding public scrutiny, then I think that we can come up with a system that we can all get behind like you're talking about.
Okay, thank you, Terry Hall of TURF. Remind our listeners, this is KSTX San Antonio, 89.1 FM. You're listening to the Newsmaker Hour, and this is a town hall meeting in which we're taking on transportation in San Antonio. I got a question from an emailer. I'm not sure if this is true, but why doesn't VIA share with the citizens of San Antonio the research that shows trolley cars cause more congestion on city streets because they only average 10 miles per hour? Then they reduce and they take away from bus routes, which harm the very people who rely on mass transit. Is that true?
I'm not familiar with that study.
So is this just folk wisdom of people who just don't like trolley cars?
It could be. I mean, streetcars operate within the existing roadway. They operate with motor vehicles, so they travel with motor vehicles. They talk to the traffic signals to try to give them some progression through the town. But in general, these vehicles operate in the same roadway as a motor vehicle.
Well, I mean, the question illustrates that there's a lot of confusion about the roles that trolley cars will play or the streetcar project that's planned for this area. I mean, kind of paint a picture for me. What would it be like?
Well, paint a picture of a vehicle approximately, 60 feet long that's carrying 100 people with one driver, one operator, moving those people through there, as opposed to maybe 85 cars associated with those motor vehicles. Paint a picture of somebody going to the Pearl for lunch that works downtown and doesn't have to walk up to their parking garage, get in their car, come out of the parking garage, pay the attendant, go over to the Pearl, park here, have lunch, and go back. They could just jump on a streetcar and make that trip in about 5 minutes. So that's kind of the picture of, once again, trying to connect places where people live, work, and play.
Yes, sir. Question from the floor.
Good evening. My name is John James, and I'm in the process of retiring after 29 years of military service. You're welcome. Well, let's see. I am a big fan of the light rail proposal. I am also a bigger fan of microzoning and walkable communities. As far as I see it, there are the average citizen drives their children to school approximately 5 miles, 10 miles to go get groceries, and 15 miles or more to go to work. The conversation is always about more, more, more. I'm wondering if any thought to planning about less. Okay, what are we doing to reduce the requirement for transportation, and what are we doing to reduce the requirement to own a car?
Daryl Bird, Vision 2020.
I've got a general comment related to the walkability. Through SA 2020, one of the 11 focus areas was called neighborhoods and growth management. And I didn't mention this earlier, but under each of these 11 areas that those thousands of San Antonians said that they wanted to have happen, the vision statements and then specific goals that would have satisfied them in the year 2020, that we would have done some extraordinary things as, together as a community. We had real specific goals. One of them under neighborhoods and growth management was walkability. You know, San Antonio, again, this city that we call home, that we love, has a walkability score of about 40, 100 being the maximum walkability in a community. That means that you, without having to ever get into a vehicle, into a car, you can walk to take care of your basic needs, you know, your dry cleaning, your grocery, and that type of thing. Of course, you can imagine what city, you know, has 100 or is very, very close to 100, and that would be New York City, and that's a very different community than San Antonio for sure. But San Antonio is at 40. Austin has a higher walkability score than the city of San Antonio. Wichita, Kansas has a higher walkability score than the city of San Antonio. this gets back to what I was speaking about earlier, which are real investments in the future of this community. And this can happen. Transit projects can contribute to higher walkability scores because of, and so can local municipalities through complete streets, which is another goal under 2020, complete streets being a street that is not solely designed and funded for vehicular transit for automobiles, but a street that also takes into consideration cyclists, walkers, mass transit, a street that maximizes the use of its entire right-of-way in service to everyone, by the way. Automobiles, they are a tool. They're not living, breathing things. They don't have a consciousness like the rest of us do. It'd be nice if the streets thought of us for a little bit. So complete streets is a major goal that I know that's on the MPO's radar screen, and I know it's on VIA's radar screen and others. But that's big for us to make real investments in complete streets that will change that walkability score in a material way, and it's not an extraordinary amount of cost. It's probably not any more actual real dollars invested, frankly, from time to time. It's just being a little more thoughtful and a little more selfless in the way we plan for those types of projects.
Terry Hall.
I wanted to jump in on the complete streets policy because a lot of these things, these buzzwords we hear about walkability and sustainable development and such, are really part of a blueprint called Agenda 21. And there's a lot of blowback to this because it's basically government control of where we live, work, and play.
And, well, that sounds a little extreme.
Okay, so hang on a second. Now, there's a big difference between government mandating complete streets or walkable communities, and them springing up through a proper planning process on their own and having somewhat of the free market decide some of these things. For instance, I lived in a walkable community. I think at one point it was one of the highest, and that's Scottsdale, Arizona. Everything I needed was within 5 miles of my house, and we did a lot of walking, and you could get places and shop with just by walking. But that was not part of, at least not that I'm aware of, any master plan that mandates these things. For instance, the Complete Streets Policy, a bill that was before the legislature just this year, and they tried to bring it on 3 or 4 different occasions, attach it to different bills and such, was going to mandate that 20% of every road project had to have that money go to put sidewalks and curbs and such on our highways. And that may make sense more with city streets and county roads, but I don't think we need sidewalks on our highways. I mean, that's crazy. I don't want my child walking out on a highway. So the mandate side of this is where I think the rub is. I think all of us want a walkable community. We all want to have to drive less. I know I sure do because I have 8 kids. I have a 12-passenger van. It's a gas guzzler. I really want to do less driving because it hurts to fill that gas tank. And we want options.
The zoning is more the issue.
Yes.
You know, if you have the ability or the community is designed to where the stores are closer.
Exactly. And, you know,
you
we don't listen to our planners.
Daryl, go ahead and respond, but keep it quick. We got to hit some other questions.
I'll be quick. I want to bring some clarity to what I said earlier. You know, I wasn't suggesting that believing in complete streets necessarily and the that coming to fruition had to be born and enforced by government. That was not what I was saying. What I was saying is complete streets is a powerful strategy to make sure that we have more walkable communities, which I think we can all agree on. And I also believe that the complete street strategy, most of that can be accomplished not through transit projects, which can contribute, not through public road projects, which typically are carrying mass amounts of vehicular traffic, happens through the marketplace demanding something different. Most new development in this city today is happening on the northern edges of the city on the north side. And that is all market driven. Some of that is incentivized, but very little of it is. Now, you out there in the audience and the rest of the folks out there in TV and radio land are the consumers. And we are not demanding complete streets. It has nothing to do with government. We are not demanding what we truly deserve in terms of the neighborhoods. We're not doing it. And the market will respond to those demands. So, you know, I would suggest that those who aren't as familiar with what a complete street really is, and it has very little to do with arterials and highways, you know, most people are putting their thinking caps on as it relates to that. It relates to local streets and streets that are very near places of where people live and neighborhoods. But I would suggest you study that a little bit And then use your power to demand that from the marketplace. And you may see some changes that have very little to do with government over time. But there will be material changes that will make your quality of life better, will make your children's quality of life better, and your grandchildren's quality of life better.
Okay. I've got an email question. And it may seem a little trivial, but this is something that's come up quite a bit. And I think something we need to think about because it involves San Antonio tradition. One emailer wanted to know what would happen if we have the streetcar running up and down Broadway and how that would be disruptive to things like our fiesta parades that we've had for so long in San Antonio. How does that work?
Believe it or not, we've actually talked about that. I had a very similar situation in Phoenix also where they had the fiesta parade for the fiesta football game. You know, we'll have to look at that design. There are a multitude of options to look at. But obviously one of the options would be just to continue with the parade and the streetcar would not operate during the parade. Another option could be the rerouting of the parade. I think all those things need to be looked at. But we do understand tradition, and we will definitely look at that as we move forward into this process.
Okay. Question from the floor.
My name is Janet Ahmad with Homeowners for a Better Building. And homeowners, taxpayers of Bexar County. My question is directed to Mr. Byrd and to Mr. Buchanan. Mr. Buchanan, you said that it would be $40 million per mile. That's going to come out to this area, right where we are today. You talked also, and I believe Mr. Byrd, you talked about the development and so forth aspects of the overall plan. In the overall plan, this area is already developed to its maximum. If not, it's committed to it within the next year. So if I'm working downtown and I want to go have lunch out here, first I've got to get to that station, which is going to be, if I'm down at City Hall, I have to go all the way up to the Thompson Center and then travel out here. By the time I get here, I need to be back at my job. Number one. So I don't know that this $40 million a mile is wisely spent. I think that's what I'm hearing said today. And my point is also, you said this is grassroots. And your boss is basically, we depend on the mayor. This is not grassroots when they push through a program like this. And we've heard it over and over and over again tonight. Go back and ask them, why can't we vote on it?
Okay, is that your question?
Well, I'd like for you to respond to the grassroots of it. We're the grassroots, and this is our voice here, but it should be somewhere else, and that's cast my vote.
I can respond to that piece first.
Mr. Byrd?
Ms. Ahmad, we may be talking about two different things. One is voting on a rail system, streetcar. The other is what I was referring to, which is the planning work and the visioning work done through SA 2020. That was, and I will defend this to my dying day, that was absolutely grassroots. That was not the vision of the mayor of San Antonio. I would not be sitting here talking to you. I would not be doing this job or doing this work if I thought that were the case. It was driven 100%, those 11 goals, by thousands of San Antonians in person over a period of 6 months, virtually, and through thousands of surveys in terms of what they wanted to see. And all of those 11 vision areas were all driven by what the shareholders, as I call them, San Antonio citizens, your peers, my peers, our neighbors, said that they wanted to have happen in the city. None of that was driven out of the mayor or business leaders or civic leaders saying, here's what we think should happen. What do you think? Will you endorse? That did not happen. That did not happen with 2020. I just want to make that distinction, Ms. Ahmad. It's a very different conversation than your concern that there is no public vote on the streetcar.
Right. And was one of the visions. It came out of that streetcar that goes 10 miles an hour.
But 2020 doesn't say, I don't think you'll find any language in the 2020 document that specifically references streetcar.
Good. Okay. Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Next question, please.
My name is John Buchkowski. I'm with the Texas Alliance for Human Needs. My question concerns connectivity in the region. I don't believe this is something that's been discussed too much tonight. But first, let me give you two examples of what I mean by connectivity. And I think Mr. Martinez could possibly back me up on one of the points. Texas State University San Marcos currently operates a public transportation system that is available to the public for a fee. Its primary purpose is to transport members of the Southwest Texas State University community. But if the people in this room wanted to pay a fare, they could ride too. Now, in regards to our area, the service that Texas State University San Marcos is now operating, and I understand they've had it for at least the last 5 years, is they are running a commuter bus between between Austin, Texas, and San Antonio. It for our friend in Villa, it comes into the Randolph Park and Ride. If you want to go see it, come in. It's right there. It don't look like a Villa bus. Another example is...
John, get your question.
My question is this. But please, let me give another example. The Alamo Area Council of Governments operates a transportation system that does come into San Antonio. It basically serves the area around San Antonio, but it does come into San Antonio also. Go down to the Modla Transit Station, and you'll see the bus come in down there.
Come on, John.
Now, the question is this. What role do you see these other transportation providers having as far as part of the solution? As I understand it, the folks operating out of San Marcos are operating a service that is really cheap compared to what you would pay to operate your car to ride a Greyhound bus.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that the issue is that those services that are being provided are provided for targeted audiences. So you're exactly right. The Texas State University bus is open to the general public, but its priority, of course, is moving students. And it doesn't do it based on the demands that we as San Antonians have to get to Austin or San Marcos. It does it based on the priority that those students have to get from San Antonio to San Marcos. And so if it has extra room in its bus, it will take general public, but its priority is its students, and it won't go beyond that priority. And so it's not advertised because if you did, it would exceed its capacity and it wouldn't be able to provide that service anymore. So that's one issue. And then you're right. They do provide a service in bringing people from the outside within this region. But that's a federally funded program with that very specific purpose as well. Its purpose is only to bring in people from the outside region into Bexar County, whether it be for medical issues or for work. But it provides that service, once again, through federal funds for that specific population and for those specific folks.
I guess my question was this, very quickly. We're talking about plans at different levels, yet I don't hear ART being mentioned at all in the discussion, and I don't hear Southwest Texas State University San Marcos being mentioned at all. And I'm just wondering, these are legitimate players. At what point do they come into the conversation, and at what point are they a part of the game plan is what I'm wondering.
And there is communication that's occurring, and I'll just end it at that. ART does work with VIA. Again, they provide the rural transit services for those outlying counties, and they do coordinate with VIA in terms of bringing those folks in to the urban area, because then they're connected with either VIA's paratransit services if needed or with their own bus service. So,
okay.
I wonder if anyone else would care to comment, maybe VIA on this, since you're accommodating the university and ART.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we would definitely like other entities to feed into our system. We greatly support that. That is a great way to bring people outside our operating system area to VIA and let us bring them the rest of the mile, we say. So, we definitely support those programs, and we look for every opportunity to have partners associated with us. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Next question, please.
My name is Joyce Felter. I don't think bureaucrat's a dirty word. I spent almost 30 years as one and then retired from the state. I am I kind of felt like we were being preached to a little bit earlier about thinking about the future. I'm the mother of a Gen Xer or two and the grandmother of millennials. I would like to see them get a chance to vote. I do not think that the people of this city will or ever have or will in the future vote for a trolley that costs $40 million per mile to put in. One thing we love to do since retiring is travel. I don't remember the last time we ever went to a city and needed a car. We don't take our own car and we don't rent one when we're there. We get around on public transit. It's wonderful, and San Antonio really, really needs more of it. As I can imagine, being a tourist here, life would be very difficult. We live right by the Botanical Center, and I see them trudging along in confusion because it's hard to get there on a bus. This, and I envy the cities that have a subway. We're never going to have one. That makes sense. Having fast light rail between here and Austin makes wonderful sense. Having light rail just running around for no purpose at all makes no sense. One of the most wonderful things we saw just blew our minds this summer, Granada. Don't have a rail of any sort that we detected. They have little buses, big buses, buses running all day and all night, every direction. You can stand and get some little buses that are smaller than a Viatrans. They only have like one person sitting on each side of the aisle. They run everywhere, cheaply, quickly, efficiently. For $40 million per mile, how many of these little buses do you think Via could put into operation and run 24 hours a day for the people who have long hours at non-traditional jobs? The sales tax, the gas tax, and even to some extent the property taxes are regressive taxes. They fall disproportionately on low-income people. Those people are supporting VIA. How many of the maids who work in Alamo Heights are going to benefit from this toy trolley? And I think that's the end of my question.
All right, you want to tackle that?
Well, I think there's truth in the great cities have great transportation systems. I don't think any of us will deny that, and I think we all agree on that point. I think I would just ask you all to think about the future, and I know I don't want to preach to anybody, but this is the beginning. This is the beginning of a lot larger system. We have to start somewhere, and we've elected to start on a five-mile streetcar system. Do I want to build light rail? Does VIA want to build light rail up in the Stone Oak, up in the 281, down to South San Antonio, to the new Texas A&M, up Fredericksburg Road, out the I-10 corridor, out the I-35 corridor? Do we want to bring mass transit to those areas? Yes, absolutely. But there's only so much money today. And that money today we've elected to put into a streetcar system along with some other things.
I would like to say, too, like to, and I know
and I would like to just add, I like to, you know, rail or rapid transit through South Cross and Zarzamora and other parts of San Antonio as well. I mean, these are parts of the city that ingress and egress has hampered their economic mobility for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we have a plan that shows bus rapid transit along with rail that crisscrosses the whole San Antonio region, and we hope to be able to implement that over the next 25 years.
I just want to quickly say, I know no one's going to be happy with this answer, but, you know, The vote in 2000 was not a vote for or against light rail. It was a vote for a sales tax increase that would have funded light rail. And that's why it went to the voters. This project is not being funded by a sales tax increase or a tax increase. It's being funded within existing revenue. And I know, again, that that's not going to be the popular answer, but that's why it's not going to voters this time. And Brian is absolutely right. In the future, in order to increase the transit system, and in order to do light rail, it will require a vote of some kind for a sales tax increase at some point in the future. Yes, it will. But today, the project that VIA is working on is not a sales tax increase.
Okay, well, time for one last question, and then we're going to do some wrap-ups.
Okay, my name is Marilyn Murray, and I'm a lifelong resident of San Antonio, Texas, and I have four grandchildren that are too young to speak for themselves, so I'm here also on their behalf, and I appreciate the fact that you're thinking into the future, and the investment in the city is well worth what we can do. However, I get a bit concerned when billions of dollars roll off the lips of individuals so easily if you understand the concept of even $1 billion. Each child born and every citizen sitting in this room as of today owes $182,700 in debt for national and state taxes. I mean, that's the debt. We have unemployment now stuck at 9% nationally and somewhere just shy of 8% in our area. Just on the way over, I heard 9% unemployment nationally is going to remain in our future for 2012. It will not drop below 7.5% for the next 6 to 7 years. So with that in mind, you're looking at $235 or $239 million to get this project going. There's been no talk about what happens in replacement costs when these streetcars, light rail, whatever it is, it's equipment and it's going to malfunction. Dallas is going through this now where they're having to, again, go for a bond issue. And for those that don't understand bond indebtedness, it's a debt that falls on future taxpayers. My future little taxpayers who already are encumbered with $183,000 of services that they haven't even used, we're now then asking to put more on their shoulders. Right now, we must take a step back. Take a pause. Why is this such an emergency? I know it takes 25 years into the future, but if you've been listening to the news, if you've been seeing what's been happening over in Europe, and we are sitting on a precipice in this country, and the only way it's going to be reversed is if spending stops and put the money to essentials.
Okay.
My question is, how can a project like this, given the current situation, be justified rationally at starting at a time like this? Wait 5 years. Let's see where we are financially. There's going to be more unemployment. We're going to be a little bit more protected because people will want to come to us. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to be affected. So the rationale for spending this money, plus in causing us to commit to future indebtedness, makes no sense. And it makes no sense not to give taxpayers a voice and a vote. So whoever would like to
handle that. All right, so let's get to the answer to the question. Sid, can you? You're the Metropolitan Planning Organization, so this talks about planning.
Sure.
What happens? Why is it so important that we would need to do things like build rail or real highways?
No. Now, you know,
I think that's a question. Are we saying that we're stopping all construction? Are we saying stop roadway construction, stop highway construction, stop? Why just transit, though? Transit is a part of the solution, and I think that's the problem, that we're seeing transit as a luxury. We're seeing transit as something that you know is just something that we can't afford. But transit is a part of the congestion solution, and transit should be a part of that solution. A successful system requires choices. And if we're going to build you can't build yourselves out of congestion. We cannot build ourselves out of congestion. And it's going to require, again, a multimodal transportation system.
A five-year window before you even started.
For anything, though, but no. But see, that's the problem, though. You're saying just transit. Well, it's not just transit, though. If you were saying stop everything, every highway project, roadway project, bike project, sidewalk project, every single roadway, everything, I don't think people in this room would advocate for that. I think people might agree with you on transit.
All right. Okay. So, Terry Hall, I think you want to jump in.
Yeah, I do. I think that we can have some of these types of plans, like we talked about before, in a well-defined plan that actually connects people from where they work and live back and forth in a manner that comes to the voters that people vote on and decide if this is where we want to go and the direction we want to head. That's a different thing than being told that we're going to have a streetcar that services primarily downtown is a nice to have in a time of dire fiscal constraints. And I think that's the difference in what we're seeing, is that a lot of folks are feeling this is non-essential, and that I would see we need to beef up our bus system and get going with our bus rapid transit as a priority to this right now.
Yeah,
because that's where the folks in the lower income levels rely on that, and the more we see unemployment go up, the more they're going to need to rely on that to get around. So I think that's where the priority really needs to be.
Leroy Alloway at the RMA, can you kind of take up the baton here and talk about why we need to be making these investments in the future?
Well, and I'll respectfully say that when you start looking at how our community's grown, and going back to something Ms. Hall had said earlier, until this last decade, we built highways on a pay-as-you-go system. Save the money, build road, save more money, build a little bit less road because prices go up. You're in a global economy. Last year, we celebrated 30 years of continuous improvement on Loop 410. 30 years of continuous improvement. If you look at being able to move in and out of your neighborhoods, being able to attract businesses, to have people still want to come to a community, and not just attract people, but provide a quality of life for the people that are already living here, you have to make that investment. There's a number of schools of thought on economics and how you can help stimulate the economy. You can cut taxes. You can make investment in public infrastructure. What you're seeing, I think part of the discussion we're still having as a community, is where is that right balance between the investment in our infrastructure, recognizing that it is a long-term investment, recognizing that it's not a simple solution. If it was easy, it would have already been done. The reality is we are now faced with the difficult choices. Do we continue to move San Antonio forward? Do we continue to make the public investment that has been historically made in our community, made across the nation, or do we restrict? There's not a right answer. There's not a wrong answer to it, but it's the difficult choices we're going to have to face as a community.
Right. Wait. So Brian Buchanan of VIA. Is the trolley car system, is that a luxury? Is it a toy for the city?
Absolutely not. It is a transportation system that is beneficial to the urban circulation of an urban core. It is a transportation system that has proven over and over again that it is an economic development engine. It is a development tool. It is a sell tool when cities want to bring conventions in and bring people in, and you know, our tourists will ride it, our residents will ride it, and we truly believe that we are building a circulator system that will serve all people.
And Daryl Bird of Vision 2020, what would be the cost of not making these investments?
Oh, you can't answer that.
Yeah, well,
you've heard from, Vision 2020 has a matrix solution for San Antonio where different things are playing in to try and make the city more competitive, yes or no?
Right, yeah, let me fly up a couple thousand feet because for me, it's transit is one piece to a puzzle to our future. And this is our collective future. You know, this is my home. This is where my son was born. You know, I'm as vested here as I've been anywhere. Education, transportation, economic competitiveness, health and fitness. This is a city where 68% of every single adult is either overweight or obese. We have incredible rates of school age pregnancies. We have transportation challenges. We have education challenges where 3 out of every 10 young people in the city of San Antonio who enter the 9th grade do not walk across the stage with their peers. The stakes are very high in this community. And I'm not preaching. I'm stating some facts. Mm-hmm. I'm stating some existing conditions in our community. And if we think blindly that those millennial young people, and you know, I know some of you have millennials who are relatives or grandchildren or children, if we think that they are going to choose San Antonio above other communities that are making investments, and they're not always government investments, by the way, they are investments that we make individually in ourselves, the investments that the private sector smartly makes in terms of making real, to Ms. Hall's point, prioritizing investments. If we don't make those investments in these 11 areas, and there are probably plenty of others, San Antonio is not going to be a place where we're proud of in the next 10 years. And those young people are going to look at us, and they're going to say, what did you do?
or what did you not do is a better way of putting it. So I think the stakes are extraordinarily high. Transportation is one area. We've got to get it right. We've got to set priorities. But they all, in my opinion, they need to be future-oriented and not based on what we as adults today think satisfies us.
Okay, and last word comes from Terry Hall of TURF. Final comment.
I also wanted to talk briefly about the economic development that keeps getting mentioned. The project seems more like it's driven by economic development than it does about mobility and congestion relief. Prop 4 was just defeated last week, in large part because the citizens of Texas do not believe the government should have anything to do with economic development. And so I just want to say that we need to be sure that we're not trampling on property rights or that we're using government to tinker with whose land gets developed or redeveloped or is considered blight or something else. We really need to guard against that. So I just want to focus again that we need to have our projects make sense and deal with our mobility and congestion issues rather than economic development.
Okay, on that note, this concludes our KSTX Town Hall. This is on our Newsmaker Hour here on KSTX San Antonio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. I've been listening to a public forum on transportation, and this KSTX Town Hall is made possible by WebHead, delivering digital web-based solutions and technologies. Thanks for everyone for being here and participating, and thanks for listening.